The following program is produced and distributed by KETR.org. You can help by visiting KETR.org and clicking donate.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another playoff edition of Lions Roar Coaches Show here at Snuffers in Greenville. We're joined first by our head football coach, Colby Carkle, coming off a 33-19. Let me get the score right. That 33-17. I know how many points we gave up. 33-17 win in the first round of the playoffs at Minnesota Duluth. First things first, have you thawed out?
Oh, I'm starting to get some feeling back in my fingers and toes, so it is great to be back in Texas. It was plenty chilly up there. It was, I think, about 18 degrees at kickoff, and we were in the shade. So it's probably a little cooler than that, and I know the wind chills were down the low single digits. So definitely the coldest game we've played in my tenure here, but it felt a lot better at the end of the game because we won. So cold doesn't bother you as bad when you come out on top.
Speaking of the temperature, you let this little nugget go in the press conference after the game on Friday at Superior High School in Wisconsin. Tell us a little bit about how some of the guys behaved there during the walkthrough to try and prove they're a little tough.
Well, that was our theme of the week, was be tough. Knew we had to be tougher than they were to win the game. And it's cold, but it's cold for both teams. I don't care if you're from Minnesota or you're from Texas. When it's single-digit wind chills, that's cold. But we went out to Superior High School there on the other side of the border in Wisconsin, right there at the mouth of the Lake Superior, and practiced there that morning about 9:30, and it was, you know, in the teens, wind chills really low, and about half our team had their shirts off and running around, and I knew then we were either a bunch of idiots or we had a pretty good chance of winning the game.
But well, there's a chance on that you could be both.
Could be both. Then again, I really didn't think we were that tough. I started hearing a band play, looked out across the parking lot, and there's Superior High School marching band out there in just T-shirts and wind pants and just marching around. I'm like, geez, if a band director down in Texas did that, he'd be unemployed by 5 o'clock. So they make them tough up there in Wisconsin, Minnesota area.
So we go up to Minnesota Duluth, a team that hasn't lost a regular season game in quite a while and hadn't given up but 3 points in the first quarter of their 11 regular season games. In the first drive of the game, get good field position, ram it right down their throats and punch it in with OV's 15-yard touchdown. That had to give you great confidence going into the rest of the game as well.
It did. That was Coach Storm challenged our offense and for that very thing. He said, we need to get the ball and establish ourselves and march right down the field and score a touchdown and let them know we mean business. And we won the toss and deferred and played defense, went 3 and out, one of, I believe, 9 3 and outs our defense forced, and so ended up getting the ball in pretty good field position, marched right down there and scored, and 3 and out at them again on defense, and marched down and scored a second touchdown and got called back due to penalty and had to settle for a field goal. But it was a really good job our offense getting out there and just establishing themselves early.
After the offense takes that 10-0 lead there in the first quarter and kind of establishes the tone of the game, it kind of got flipped on its head there pretty quick. Looking at it, there's two pick sixes there, an 80-yard return and a 29-yard return in the span of about 4.5 minutes there by Minnesota Duluth. Going back and looking at it and being on the field at the time, I don't think they were necessarily bad throws. They made good plays.
Yes, the middle linebacker, he was an all-conference player for him, senior. And that was a very senior-laden team. They had 23 seniors on that team. So we knew we were up against a formidable opponent that had some great senior leadership. But that linebacker made a great play on the one wide receiver screen and returned it 69 yards, I believe it was, or 79.
80.
It was a long ways. And then very next series, we threw another. We're just trying to check it down to the running back. And D-tackle, you know, made a great play on it and batted it around, caught it on his helmet, took off 29 yards and scored. So we were behind there. But I was really pleased with the way Kane responded. And just our whole team responded. There was no finger pointing. Nobody got down. I mean, the defense had given up 2 first downs the whole half, and we found ourselves behind 14-10. Other interesting stats, since you're a stat guy.
Being I am a stat
SID,
guy.
I believe they had more return yards in that one interception return than they had offensive production the whole first half.
So. By 30.
By 30.
It was 50 yards, 2 first downs, and 0-for-8 on third downs in the first half for them.
You just can't put together a better defensive performance than that in a half, and to find yourself down 14-10 was kind of frustrating, but we took care of that with that final series.
Yeah, so both after the 2 interception returns for touchdowns by the Bulldogs, both offenses kind of bogged down a little bit. The momentum really didn't swing in their favor, but it definitely stopped on our side too, right there until they. And when you go back and look at the punt, it's a term that kind of gets overused sometimes, but they definitely outkicked their coverage. When you look at it, Dominique Ramsey had plenty of room to get a head start before he runs through eight different tacklers and then gets into open space. That was a heck of a punt return, 80-yard punt return there by Dominique Ramsey with 5 seconds left in the half. He crosses the goal line to score, put us up 17-14 going into halftime. Dominique Ramsey is just a heck of a return man, whether it's interceptions, punts, or kickoffs.
He's a really good football player, and we knew that when we recruited him. He was a district defensive MVP down there, played for Converse Judson, and you don't pass up a guy like that. Got another one in the wings with T.K. Lloyd that we got out of Allen, the district defensive MVP that we were able to land out of Allen High School.
They play pretty big football over there.
You can save this clip in about a few years, play it back about T.K. Lloyd. They're built the same and really dynamic players. But Dominic has done a great job on defense as a return man, and that really was. The game had kind of stalled. They still had the momentum because they had the lead. And with their defense, they felt like if they had a one-point lead, they were going to win the game. So they were doing well. We were trading punts. We really crushed them in the special teams battle in terms of hidden yards. Their net punt was for the game was 14.5 yards, where ours was nearly 35. And you add that up over the 20 points or 20 punts in the game, it comes up to nearly 200 yards of hidden yardage that was in our favor. I think that really was a turning point. But we were actually trying to get out of the half. Didn't take a delay of game, let the clock run down to one, and then called a timeout before we punted it to them with 46 seconds. So we're sitting on two timeouts, and, you know, we're thinking we're going to the half. Well, they
– Yeah, I mean, common knowledge. I mean, if you've got the lead, most teams try to maybe run up the middle, make you burn some timeouts, but get the first down or maybe kneel it out.
They didn't even have – we didn't have enough timeouts to stop it. I mean, the half was over, but they decided to throw the ball on first down, incomplete, and I was like, all right, boys, here we go. And so we timed them out the next two plays, and they had to punt back to us. And then, you know, you talked about out kicking your coverage. I usually refer to my smoking hot wife when I talk about out kicking coverage, but in this case their punter out kicked his coverage, and you know, tremendous job by Ramsey, but also those other 10 guys on the field. He broke some tackles, but there were some big time blocks in that return, and all above the waist and in front. And you big returns you see come back a lot of times just because one dumb penalty. But really pleased with that whole unit, with that return. They had another block. They had two other block kicks. So we really set ourselves up with, you know, scored 14 points off just a punt return unit, but also blocked another kick and snuffed out a fake punt. So really hats off. Players of the game was the punt return, punt block unit for the Lions.
So you talk about that hidden yardage. It was 14.8. Net yards per punt for the Bulldogs, 34.3 for the Lions, a total of 20 punts. So that's a ton of yardage. You said it was almost 190 in your head?
Yeah, it was right at 190.
Well, they only had 188 yards of offense. Right. So when the hidden yardage adds up to more than the total offensive yardage, and that's a pretty good indicator of how special teams is going.
There's another 50 yards of hidden yardage in the kickoff coverage and return units, too, in our favor. And it was just a dominant performance by our special teams, and we chart everybody it's in our region that we may play on about 10 different stats and by national rankings, and we're ranked 17th in the country overall in special teams on all those. When you add them all up, Duluth was like 34th in the country. After our game, they redo the stats on the NCAA website. We knocked them from 34th down to 96th.
Wow.
In special teams. So that just a hats off to all those guys that travel up there that may not be a starter, but have a huge impact in the game with those units.
Yeah, talking about that travel up there and might not be a starter, but even with that, you can only dress 58 players. You can only warm up 58 players in this. Mm-hmm. It's a lot like an NFL game in where you're having to make roster cuts almost up to the very last second, especially with plane travel for a trip like that. You're definitely making some tight decisions. How important is it to show yourself in special teams and in practice and maybe scout team early in the year for the whole season to be able to prove yourself as a player to deserve to be on the 58?
We're already evaluating that, you know, setting those rosters or getting some ideas for those rosters for the 2019 team right now, because all our red shirts, we've got a tremendous redshirt freshman class, and they're all redshirt, and they're also, we actually call them green shirts, put them in a green jersey. So they make up our scout teams, and they do a phenomenal job with the scout team looks in our special teams packages. And when I mentioned T.K. Lloyd earlier, Jordan Johnson, guys that are blocking punts or, you know, forcing big plays to happen as a scout team unit, you know, they know they're you know, winning our respect and in terms of let's get those guys. They know the first place to get on the field after the redshirt year is going to be special teams. So they're making a big impact in practice, which gives us a great look, which increases our chance of being successful with our special teams unit. So you got to work at it. It's not something you just go out there and, oh, they got a good kicker, so they're good at special teams. Yeah. It's a makeup of your team and your coaches and their commitment to that phase of the game.
We haven't even talked about the offense yet, except for maybe that first drive, which is pretty impressive. Kane Wilson threw, yeah, he had the two pick sixes, but he was pretty efficient the rest of the game. Outside of those, he was 14 of 29, 213 yards, and a big touchdown pass over the top to Wimberly. We're coming out of that third quarter, so I think it was about 3 minutes of clock time. There's a 14-minute swing. That first drive of the first half and the first drive of the third quarter were both very big for the Lion offense.
Yes, that last drive of the first half. Yeah, the punt return, and then we came right back out, challenged again at halftime. Maybe we need a challenge just every time we take the field because they marched right back down. We received the second-half kickoff and went straight down the field and scored, got behind them again. I think we had three big balls thrown over their heads on the night, and we felt like our speed would play into that game. And even though it's cold, and we practiced in the cold, we was ready for it, and our kids played tough. And so that was really big to loosen them up a little bit and get the run game going. And offense really, you know, they didn't put up gigantic numbers, but you got to remember they were going to go up against the best defense in all of college football,
yeah,
any level. I mean, they were number one in rush defense, total defense, scoring defense, third down defense, time of possession. They were about as dominant as you can be on paper, and our guys put together, minus, you know, the two turnovers, a really solid game. That's why we call it a team win. I mean, it was really well played by, we talked about special teams, offense, and obviously defense. Completely annihilated them.
Ryan Stokes had five catches for 100 yards with a long of 43. Marquise with the big one over the top, three for 49 with a touchdown. And Matt Childers had a big catch to the near side that wound up setting up a field goal, I believe.
That was a first drive. That was a touchdown drive.
Touchdown drive. I mean, and then talking about special teams, and we haven't brought up little baby Kristoff yet. Mm-hmm. Biggest hit of the game once again. He got to carry the sledgehammer out for the coin toss.
Right.
He seemed pretty proud of that, too.
He may carry it again this week because he did his opening kickoff, and we did a poor job, got out of our lanes a little bit, and they had everybody blocked and a lead blocker, and they were headed for pay dirt, and he just came smoking across the field and annihilated that lead blocker, knocked him smooth off his feet and into the returner and knocked him out of bounds. So it was a play. He's not going to make any highlight reels, and you're not going to, you know, see it on the news. You don't get a stat for it, but it was probably a game-winning play because they take the opening kickoff to the house, changes the whole dynamic of the game. So really pleased with him. He came back later. We had some miscues. That's where we did flub up, was in our field goal snapping, holding unit. Had one bad snap, one bad hold. He was able to deliver late in the game a 43-yard field goal with that wind, in that cold, with all the pressure coming, and that stretched that to from a 13-point game to a 16-point game, which I think put the game completely out of reach.
And to his credit, that wasn't even on it. It was a tough snap and hold, too. The mechanics weren't 100% perfect, and that can really throw off a kicker's timing. He was still able to knock it through.
It was off. Our timing was off, but it was a great kick. And that, you know, if you're 13 points behind, you can come back. You can score, get an onside,
and score,
and you win the game. But by that kick happening, you know, we were able to extend that lead to 16. Now you need five really good plays. You've got to score, get a two-point conversion.
Get an onside,
score, and convert another two-point conversion. The odds of you doing those five plays against our defense and how well they were playing are not very good. So I think everybody in the stadium knew that game was over when he knocked that kick through.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of games when – As a fan, you get a 16-point deficit or advantage. You have that hope that kind of we're still in it, because in your head it may be five plays, but as a fan you're thinking it's two scores.
Right.
But in the stadium, the feel of it, and they had a pretty good crowd, especially considering the weather and everything, even though they're used to it, it kind of deflated the stadium a lot. That 16-point lead felt a lot bigger to, I think, everybody else in the stadium because it took the crowd out of it.
Well, when they only had – first downs in the first half and hadn't had much more than that in the second half. I mean, we had 9 3 and outs and two turnovers. And like I say, our defense just, you know, Coach Power and the defensive staff did a great job last week putting together a really good game plan. And our players did a nice job executing it. And they shut them down. It was suffocating. And I think all the talk had been about Duluth's defense, but they were the second best defense on the field. And that was obvious to everybody at the stadium.
Talking more about Kristoff, he gets 6 points. He's up to, I believe it's 434 points that he's got, or 433. With 5 points, he becomes the all-time leading scorer in the LSC. And I think one of the things that we've not missed, that'll be the all-time leading kicks-only scorer. The only person above Sergio Castillo from West Texas and Kristoff who ever made a field goal was Walter Payton at Jackson State, who I didn't know he kicked in college either. Walter Payton made 5 field goals as a kicker at Jackson State in the 70s.
Do it all.
So, neat little Walter Payton fact. Mm-hmm. But so, I don't think I realized that as much as I've looked at this chart. He won't just become the all-time LSC scorer. He'll become the all-time leading kick scorer as well with 5 points at Tarleton this weekend.
For NCAA.
For Division II. Yeah. And
yeah.
I've got to check the rest of the divisions too, but that's really, really impressive.
He's pretty special, and you know, he's very consistent and got a strong leg, and he's improved over his time here. He wasn't, you know, an All-American kicker his first year here. He was just an average kicker, but he worked really hard and got better and better. Tremendous student athlete, 4.0 graduate, getting his master's now while he's still playing.
Academic player of the year.
Academic player of the year in the Lone Star Conference. But it's not just his kicks. You know, it's his kickoffs. I mean, we have led all of college football in kickoff coverage each of the past two seasons with a tremendous amount of touchbacks. We're not just pooching them back there. We're kicking deep and covering, and then his trick kicks. You know, you've seen us with as many onsides as we've done over the years. He's really, really talented and can do some things off that tee.
So coming off the win, the other games in the region, Colorado State Pueblo, they have a rematch game. They take out Colorado School of Mines. Mankato's got the bye, so they'll play Pueblo in the next round. Tarleton gets Azusa Pacific in what was maybe a surprise to some people around the country and in the conference in terms of the selections, but they get Azusa Pacific, and they put the hurt on them, 58-0. Looking at it, Tarleton's given up 3 points in the last three games. They're pretty hot coming into this game.
Right, they really were, and you know, I think everybody, including myself, you know, thought Midwestern was probably stronger than Azusa, but I know with the regional committee and all that stuff, it comes down to numbers, and it's a guessing game, and unfortunately, you know, our conference has been on the back end of that for two straight years. Eastern New Mexico got left at home. I felt like they should have been in, and I was, you know, I don't root for the Mustangs a whole lot, but I felt like they should have been in and was rooting for them, but Azusa got in, you know, played at Tarleton, and, you know, it was a one-sided affair. And that film, I watched that here today, and it got away from them in a hurry. Tarleton is as talented of a team as I've seen in this league in probably, you know, 15, 20 years. They're as good as it – talent-wise, as good as that I've seen probably. Top to bottom, offense, defense, just they've got some tremendous athletes. They're playing very, very well together. They're very well coached. Coach Witten does a phenomenal job over there. He has a good staff. Some of those guys are LSC vets, have been around a while. And so you recruit really good and coach them upright, you're going to win some ball games. And that's what they're doing over there in Stephenville. And so we'll have our hands full Saturday, but hoping we can have a good week of practice and a good week of prep and get over there and give ourselves a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter.
Looking back at the old brackets, this was one – I had noticed it's the first time in 10 years that two LSC teams have met up with each other in the playoffs. That year, only 6 teams from each region got in, and both of the first round matchups were LSC matchups, and that turned into eventually one of the other LSC matchups you were around for, and we won't mention the score because I believe you're the defensive coordinator for that game.
Yes, sir.
In Abilene.
That was a wild one.
Yeah, we won't mention the score. Just for
I promise we won't kick 6 onside kicks this game, but we will play to win.
I'm sure the stat guys appreciate that as well. And looking back at it, you think about a lot of teams don't see a team for a second time in the season very often.
Mm-hmm.
But we've done it more recently than other because of the great idea that the LSC playoff was there for a couple of years. You've seen the same team twice in the same year before. What are the challenges as a coach to seeing the same team twice in the same season? And then on the flip side, what are the advantages of seeing the same team twice in a season?
You know, I don't know. I hope they have the same luck we had trying to beat a team twice. We were 0-2 in that silly LSE playoff they made us play. That was the biggest joke in college football there for 2 years. But that's water on the bridge now, I guess. But it was tough. You know, it's tough to beat a team twice, and it's tough to prepare for them. I think, you know, psychologically it's in the back of your head. And, oh, I hope, I don't know if we can do this twice again. I think psychologically it's in your head that, hey, we've got an advantage because we lost the first time. But bottom line, it comes down to just, you know, executing game plans, have good weeks of practice, and preparing to be successful. And so I think the team that gets out there and does little things right and takes care of the football and plays best defense and establishes run game, you know, I mean, which that's going to determine the winner. So, and that could probably be said for any football game. But in the playoffs, it really comes down to turnovers, being able to run the football and playing good defense and being sound the special team. So both teams are really good in all those categories. So that's why I think it will be a marquee matchup. It's going to be a heavyweight title fight in Stephenville Saturday at 1. And really excited just for our conference because it is, I think, two of the premier teams in the country. And over Thanksgiving weekend, usually we're playing all over the country, so we don't have many fans. But I know Lion Nation will show up droves there, Stephenville on Saturday, because it's a fairly close drive. Everybody be over their turkey hangover and be able to get over there and root us on, hopefully to a victory.
We've been playing on Thanksgiving weekend now for 3 consecutive years. How much does the holiday play into preparation or celebration at the same time?
Yeah, it's something we pride ourselves on, is to, you know, be playing football on Thanksgiving, and, you know, with those 2 bowl games too. I mean, I think it's been 5 out of 6 years we've been having to practice on Thanksgiving week. So that's fun. The challenging thing is trying to find a place to feed your team on Thanksgiving holiday. So, but it's a good problem to have. There's a lot of people who'd love to still be playing, and we're fortunate enough to be doing that. And our coaches are working hard, and we're putting together a good week to eliminate excuses and have a great week of preparation still. I have a lot to celebrate and to be thankful for in this great country and the freedoms we take for granted every single day. So we're gonna celebrate Thanksgiving right together as a team, and then get them locked in later in the week and prepared for a big game on Saturday.
Speaking of Thanksgiving, you and I can't have many conversations without food coming up. What's your favorite Thanksgiving food, both savory and dessert?
Oh, I'd just say a big old ribeye steak cooked rare. And then dessert, probably have the rest of someone else's ribeye steak, hopefully still cooked rare. And that's pretty much as good as it gets on Thanksgiving.
I was going to say ribeye on Thanksgiving. That is, I've heard turkey and ham. I was thinking maybe casserole of some variety, but ribeye steak on Thanksgiving, I might need to talk to some people in my family.
I'm from a farming ranching background, so Carthels don't get too far from the red meat.
I was going to say, I mean, I might need to talk to some people on my side of the
family. My father-in-law, he can fry up a turkey. It will, you know, make you want to slap your mama. I love my mama, so don't slap her. But
no, I would never slap
that
your mama.
Fried turkey Steve Butler can put together is pretty special too. I'll maybe have it in between the 2 ribeyes.
I was going to say, I mean, that's a heck of a day right there. You got to plan that out. And then how much does – this is the first time we've had a playoff game close to home, other than home games. Mm-hmm. How much does it being a routine LSE opponent, a place we're used to going, a trip that we're used to having, we know the press box, we know the field, we know the town – all of our fans know how to get there. How do you see that playing out? Because it's not something we've got to experience here in Commerce, but it's something that you've seen in the past.
I think it'll play out to a great atmosphere. You know, much like you're fixing to talk to Craig Case, our Coach of the Year, volleyball.
I mean, we've got 2 LSE Coaches of the Year. I was going to sign off with that for you to make sure we got the big round of applause. But
yeah.
You know,
well, hey, you win, you lose 2 games, you get honored for it, I guess, in this league. So we won't go there to.
I was going to let you take all of that.
Politics of that silly award, but I guess we went there. So, but, you know, volleyball got to play a regional championship over there in Stephenville, and so I know he'll talk about it. They'd score a point, and Tarleton fans go wild. We'd score a point, and our fans just as loud. So I think you'll see that on Saturday just because we'll have a great turnout. We travel well. We've got great fans. We've got great alumni. And like I say, you got Thanksgiving on Thursday. You got Black Friday on Friday. What in the world else could you be doing on Saturday other than going watch a second round regional semifinal game, the Lion football? So expect a big turnout in Stephenville. Expect it to be a great day for for Lion football.
All right. Well, the Lions kick off at 1 o'clock in Stephenville. Gates in Stephenville open at 11 o'clock. So here's the thing. Because it's an NCAA game, they're only required to save us 500 seats. We think we'll get more. But if you want to get in there early and spread out, if you've got some people who don't necessarily need to tailgate the way that some other people do, get to the gate at 11, go in there, spread out, box some people out, and take up some Memorial Stadium.
Let me tell you, they say the stands on our side fit 500. They may fit 200. And so there's going to be overflow crowd. If you want to sit on our side, you dang sure better be there early. If not, you're going to be in the end zone or having to stand over there with all those purple poo. And so our fans better get there early and show up and be loud because it's going to be a packed house.
Yeah, and that 2 hours early, that's a lot different. We only open an hour early. So getting there 2 hours early, just make sure you know that, because if you show up an hour early, I don't know how their fans are going to turn out. Like I said, it's Thanksgiving weekend. This is a new thing for them. They haven't hosted in almost, I think it's 9 years. So
they hosted last week.
Well, last week. Okay. They hosted last week. You had to get one in there.
I got to keep you in check.
You had to get one in there on me. But before that, they hadn't hosted in 9 years, and it definitely wasn't on Thanksgiving weekend. So we don't know how their fans will turn out, but the Lions are used to playing on Thanksgiving now, and we finally get one on Thanksgiving near home, so we know how our fans will turn out. We'll talk to you again beforehand. Let's give a round of applause for the LSC Coach of the Year, Head Coach Colby Carthel. We'll be right back with the other LSC Coach of the Year, Craig Case, right here on Lions World.
The program you're enjoying right now was made possible by a group of folks just like you who make contributions to public radio. Support programs just like this one. Visit KETR.org and click donate.
All right, we're back here on Lions Roar Coaches Show. Here, playoff edition here from Snuffers in Greenville. Talking to Coach Case now, the Lions.
We had a visitor or viewer or listener question. What did that one say?
Okay, you can read that. You can read the okay, viewer question.
This is from Raphael from Richardson. First time, long time. Like caller, listener?
Yeah, first time, long time caller.
Question for Josh, actually. Have you ever outkicked your coverage?
Heck yes.
All right.
Yeah, that is definitely the answer, because also, A, it's true, and B, I know she's watching.
I didn't know you played football.
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
No. I just talk about it and hit buttons for a living.
I think you would have made a terrific punter.
I don't have the work ethic to be a punter. I would have gotten it blocked every time. My leg would have gotten blocked. It would have been broken knee. No.
Well, you know your limitations. There's value to that.
Yes, I have very many limitations, and I know most of them. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, thanks, buddy.
You're welcome. Thanks, Raphael.
Yeah, thanks, Raphael. We'll move on to volleyball. The Lions make it all the way to the regional championship match for the first time since 1987, finishing the final 16 teams in the country. There's a lot of analysis to be had, a lot of matches to roll through. Huge winning streaks to talk about, atmosphere to talk about. It's been over for not even 48 hours practically. 30-6 season. There's no way you saw that many wins coming in. It's just what a heck of a ride.
Yeah, I mean it was good. It was a good season. A lot of fun.
Okay.
It was just a lot of fun.
You just said you qualified a 30-6 season as good.
Well, you know, it's all relative. You're catching me on the back end of a loss. I mean,
well, to be fair, we haven't had that many of them in a while.
So like, I'm not familiar this year on how to unpackage losses. Now, you know, I think the thing that's been really interesting the last 2 days since we lost is it seems like everybody that's been following and been part of our program this year has had a different memory, and they're like, oh, you know, did somebody texted me, hey, you know, you guys. We're one of only 10 teams that had 30 wins in the nation. And to be honest, before that, I thought there was about 15 or 20.
Yeah.
And I well, wow, that's really cool. And everybody seems to have a favorite match that they remembered. Oh, do you remember when you guys were 1-5? And I'm like, well, that was every match, wasn't it? And so that's been the really fun thing. And that's not just players either. That's been fans. That's been boosters. That's been families. My mom and dad, I mean, just everybody's kind of had their favorite moment of the season. And that –
Pecan, go Loins.
That's how you know it's been a really fun season, when everybody attached to it can kind of have something that belongs to them a little bit.
It's got to be kind of weird also. It's a game note that we really didn't talk about because we didn't want to jinx things. You played more matches in Stephenville this year than you did in Commerce. So that means – and now with the football team, they'll have played more games on the road than they have at home. All three of our fall sports that have head-to-head competitions played more games – in other places than they did in Commerce.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I felt pretty good about going into the regional tournament is you know, we've won a lot outside of our gym. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was going to be really valuable to us. And, you know, I think, go back up, what did we end up with, 20 wins?
20 and 5 away from the field house.
I mean, for a team that has really leaned on its home schedule for the last 3 years.
I mean, we've lost one match in the field house in the last 2.5 seasons.
Yeah, and so, you know, that was one of the things we talked about in the preseason. That was one of the things we talked about last spring. You know, because last spring, I don't know if you remember, we went and played a lot of Division I's, mm-hmm. and we went to some different places that were going to be really tough for our team to play in. And that was kind of the theme all spring was, we've got to figure out how to play in these environments. And, you know, I think that continued on and rolled on, and then we built on some early season success, and that's how you do well outside of the field house.
So in the first match, you take down Angelo State 3-1. That's an yep. opponent you know, the opponent we knew was going to challenge us, but we rose up to the challenge. And that's a match over the last few years. It's been back and forth, back and forth. We've won, they've won, all sorts of stuff. And really, I don't have that many questions about that. That's the first one that's yep. a team you know. You've been to a regional before. It's the first regional win in a while. But that one, I'm not going to say we expected to win, but there's a lot less unknown in that one than there is in day two against Colorado Mesa. You've got about 24 hours of turnaround, play a team that I'm not sure we've ever even seen before. I don't think they played in any of the same tournaments we did. You don't have nearly the time to film review as you do for a first-round match, and it's a team you haven't played before. How big of a challenge is that from match one to match two, especially with a team who hasn't really had that match one to match two challenge before?
Well, you know, the good thing for us is we were the 2 seed in the conference tournament mm-hmm. as well. So we had a good rhythm, and we knew what we were going to be doing, and we knew what to expect. And so, you know, I think that was kind of the success from the conference tourney really helped kind of walk us through this last tournament. And, you know, Mesa, we saw them actually 2 years ago at the Tarleton State tourney, and they beat us in 4. You know, Coach Fleming over there, I've met him before, and we've had a casual, you know, friendship, and we've got a bunch of mutual friends. He's a great coach. The value that we had there was we had played them, and we remembered their systems a little bit, and we knew what they were wanting to do. And then they had 2 middles that were – really good, and we knew exactly what they were going to do, when they were going to do it, and we couldn't stop them. Mm-hmm. And so that was a really fun match because it was – again, I've talked about it in other matches. It, you know, when we had to play their style, we didn't have a chance.
Yep.
When they had to play our style, you know, we were going to win. And so it was just constantly a tug of war to get playing your style of volleyball, and, you know, we did it two sets. They did it 2 sets, and then we – cranked it up for that 5th set to see what was going to happen.
And that 5th set, 15-12, I mean, you look at it, they actually scored more points in the match than us, and we win.
Yeah, that chalked up to about another 12 or 13 other matches in the year that statistically we got beat.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's one of the things that I love about this team is we found a way to win a lot of volleyball matches that if you look at the stats after, you're going, probably shouldn't have won that match. And so that's a fun team when you're not supposed to win. You know, we were picked 4th. We had 1 first-team all-conference. All those other reasons why we shouldn't have done well, but yet we found a way to be successful.
Yeah, not necessarily superstar, but a team of true team players who happen to be pretty dang good.
That's right. A bunch of really good volleyball players together. But that Mesa match was one of the funnest matches of the year.
And that moves into what had to have been probably one of the best volleyball atmospheres you've ever been a part of. When you play a team, as we were talking about with Coach Carthel, for a football team playing a team 2 times in a year, it's got to be really tough. You play in volleyball, you play each other twice in the regular season, and yep. then that 3rd time is kind of the tough one
yep.
when you play them in the conference tournament. And it doesn't happen very often in too many conferences, and even the toughest conference in the country in the Northern Sun this week, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I want to unpack that a little bit too. But you have to play Tarleton a 4th time and the 3rd time on their floor, and it was for large portions of the match about as tight as you could get it, except for maybe the 3rd set, and it goes into extra points in the 4th. I mean, that had to be just stupid fun to be able to coach in. I'm doing post-game for a football game that we just won, and in my head I'm like, I got to know what's going on with volleyball. I got to see the crowd. Like, that had to be wild.
It was a carbon copy of the week before. It's mm-hmm. just this one leaned their way. You know, at any point that 1st set, you know, it was tied 20-20 or right in there, and That 1st set could have swung our way real fast. That, you know, that 2nd set, they could have won that 2nd set pretty easily. You know, the 3rd set, they jumped out to a pretty big lead, just like they did in the first set, but we tied it up in the first set. And so, you know, it just that was a really fun match. You know, I've always been the type of person that just because we lose a volleyball match doesn't mean it was the worst thing that ever happened to us. We played pretty good volleyball against a pretty good volleyball team, and they had our number that day. And, you know, if we were about to play right now, we might win that one. So when you got the number one team in the region versus the number two team in the region 2 weekends in a row, you knew it was going to be a pretty exciting volleyball match.
So Tarleton advances, and as much as I like talking about our team and everything, I do have, they wind up as the sixth seed in the national tournament in the final eight, and I'm trying to pull up and look at these others real quick. They get to play Western Washington as a three. I thought Western Washington is pretty solid, but you've got teams like Tampa, you've got Wheeling Jesuit, who's won a national title,
yep.
Washburn, who knocked out Concordia, one of the teams that we beat.
Yep.
You had Harding, the team who knocked us out or beat us in the first match of the season, probably one of the out of the five losses before this weekend, probably the one we felt the worst about.
Yeah.
I would have to guess. They go out and beat the number one seed in the best region.
Yeah, number three team in the nation. And Kearney was destroying people. And now Washburn caught fire in that regional tournament. And they beat Duluth, and then they beat Concordia. And now, you know, here they are.
And then Lewis, another team who we beat in the Elite Eight. So, I mean, if Concordia pulls out their regional championship, there's three teams that we beat at some point in the season in the Elite Eight. Sorry, NCAA, it's not technically the Elite Eight in the championship.
The championship.
But I mean, what does that say about how tough that tournament is? And, I mean, I expected our region to be seated a little higher.
I look at those results, and I'm even more proud of the season we had.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that national tournament bracket, and you could circle a lot of teams that we played on there. And you could probably circle as many teams on that, probably more than anybody else in the country. And so, you know, again, for us to have a 30-win season, yet we're looking at the national championship bracket going, oh, we played them, we played them, we played them, we played them.
We beat them.
In a lot of cases,
we beat them.
We beat them. So, it's to be more rewarding to be there, but it's also still pretty exciting to know, hey, we were a couple of points away from being able to be in that situation as well, and hopefully we can take that and build on going forward.
Talking about moving forward, I mean, we talked about the senior class a little bit back on senior day. You've got the Wacker twins, and those are the ones who definitely stand out. We've been yelling their name into the microphone for 4 years, or 3 years for me, but for 4 years, and a bunch of other senior leadership. And I'm sure Marcus can attest to this, having been with them for the last week. It's fun to win, and as Coach Carthel says with the football team, we don't have fun because we win. We win because we have fun. Talk about your team and the makeup and what you'll remember out from this team besides wins and losses this year.
They're good people. And, you know, if you can put together good people who are talented and have a passion for something, you're going to be really good at it. And so I think that, you know, between Sarah, myself, and some of our other graduate assistants over the past few years, we've been able to bring together really good people who are pretty good volleyball players and have a passion for their teammates in our volleyball program. And when you get those three things together, you know, the rest of it kind of takes care of itself. And, you know, I was just sitting here thinking about how long ago senior day was. I mean,
it's 4 weeks.
It feels like it was 3 months ago. And it's just been a real special time with those guys. Now, you talk about that senior group. You know, I think a lot about Jaron Jaslin. I think about Peyton McMillan. I think about Bina Jeekum. I mean, those four have been here all 4 years, and they have been here through some really high highs and some lows. And then you added a couple transfers in there, you know, Preston Laneman, Carolina Machado. I mean, we're in and it sounds cliche, but we had good people that are really good volleyball players, and they have a passion. And that's what our aim was, and that's what we're able to do, and that's when you have a good time.
How hard is it to come off a loss and still celebrate? Because this is a season that should be celebrated. And I know it feels kind of down losing that last match, but you had the best season the school's had in 31 years. It's one of those that just feels routine at this point because we have been winning for a while. But we haven't – this is a outstanding season in that it stood out. Not just using it as an adjective. It stands head and shoulders above anything that's been done, because even if, and no offense to anybody who was on the 87 team, there's just not as many Division II volleyball teams back then.
What was there, 200, 290 right now?
It's over 300, I believe.
Yeah, over 300. Maybe 290 have volleyball.
Yeah, and you were in the final 16.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's really neat, and you know, one of the problems, not problems, one of the things that happens though in that process is, and this is something we emphasized early, because we understood how important those early matches were with regional rankings, and we really wanted to host the regional tournament. We felt like if we can host that regional tournament, we got a shot of winning a national championship, and because you play half of your NCAA matches at home.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we put so much emphasis from the start on all those regional matches. And then once we had those huge wins that second weekend, and even the win over Central Oklahoma, once we had those three really big wins in our back pocket, we knew that we had put together a pretty good resume. And after that, it was just fighting every single day. And we kind of had an attitude of, hey, if we don't do our job today, then we just wasted all that effort early. And so then that just kind of got into this team's DNA. So you just really got into this one match at a time mentality. I know people talk about it cliche-wise, but, I mean, I honestly couldn't tell you half the teams we played this year.
Well, you should be able to, because they've been in the conference for about 20 years.
And I wouldn't be able to tell you. I mean, I'd assume we won, but, you know, you just stop on that. So the downside of that is you kind of minimize the impact of those really good wins. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, the plus side is it helps you be more successful as you're going on. So it was an interesting year, and as I kind of thaw out, you know, from the football team being in the Duluth, you know, in my head I'm kind of thawing out from the season. Once I thaw out and I'll be able to really let everything unravel, it'll be fun to really sit back and treasure this season. We're excited, and I'm not down at all about losing that match. If we had played bad against a bad team and lost, I probably would have been. But we played good against a good team, and we just didn't have enough in that match. And so the only thing I said to the team after the volleyball match was I was proud of them and I loved them. And, you know, that's how I feel moving forward, and I don't think that'll change anytime soon.
I know it's a lot to unpack, and you haven't had time to, like we said, right at 48 hours since the last match. Quick rewind through your head, quick DVR. Give me one or two moments that just stand out. Just not even wins and losses or anything like. What's just a moment that you remember?
You know, I don't know. There's a lot. I think.
Well, we're on the internet. Run through as many as you want.
One of the probably just going back to the weekend. I could go throughout the year. The locker room, the excitement, and the focus and the determination in the locker room after the Mesa win. Is something that I will feel the rest of my life. That was really special, and everybody was in there. We had some girls that didn't play, and they were fired up. I mean, there wasn't one person in that locker room that was into themselves. Everybody was into the team, and everybody was fired up. And that I'll remember that one a long time. That was a real special event.
All right, man. Well, hey, it's been a blast having you on the show with us. Let's make sure we give him a big round of applause. Our LOC Coach of the Year and regional finalist, head coach Craig Case. And potentially the most entertaining volleyball guest we've ever had on this show. We're going to wrap up the show with one last segment as we talk women's basketball with head coach Jason Burton right after a quick break on Lions Roar.
This show and others like it from KETR.org are made possible by generous contributions from listeners just like you. Donate today at KETR.org.
All right, we're going to wrap up tonight's edition of Lions Roar Coaches Show with a first-time guest here at Snuffers, our head women's basketball coach Jason Burton, who obviously did not consult me many, many months ago when he made his practice schedule before I scheduled this so we'd get him on more often. But we thank him for hopping his way over here. You know that Monday nights are busy for the women's basketball team. It's been a busy year for you guys already. Five times on the court in games that people have seen, two scrimmages, the scoring 61 points at Baylor, a couple of overtime games. Kind of, it's hard to quickly do, but unpack these first 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I really like to highlight the 61-point scored part, but not how much Baylor scored.
I know how to do my job, Jason.
Now, you know, it's come and gone really quickly already, and a lot of new faces on our team, and it's been fun just to kind of get to know this team. You know, we're really still filling each other out. I'm filling the players out. They're filling each other out and me, and so it's been a learning process, so it's been kind of good to get so many scrimmages and games in a short amount of time, and – and kind of got from off the road. And now that we have a streak coming up where we're six out of seven games at home. And so it's
the
it's
one
nice,
road game is pretty close.
And it's a trip to the casino and back.
For some of us, I am not I love you. I love your team. But I did my casino trip in Duluth, went up big Thursday, lost Friday, not going to your game Sunday. But the other thing I want to pull out is that you've been able to win and experience close games already. First game at Pueblo, you take them to overtime, and that was a team last year that it was a close game and it didn't go our way. You wind up losing again, but taking them to overtime in neutral site's good. You went by five against Metro and went in overtime again in the home opener against St. Ed's.
Yeah,
getting that experience in close games is going to pay off later on down the road.
In some form or fashion. It may be heart problems for me. It may be...
You're too young for that. You're younger than me. You're not allowed to have those yet.
No, it's good. It's kind of good to get this experience early on and to really see the growth. You don't want to lose that first game in Pueblo, but I feel like we learned some things from that Pueblo loss in overtime. And then when we played Friday night and took St. Ed's to overtime, I think we were more comfortable. And we learned from our mistakes and stepped up to the plate and found a way to pull away with a win. And a really good win versus an undefeated team.
You know, one of the other things I want to talk about, that St. Ed's match, I'm not going to lie, I was stressed out about that game because Marcus and I were both on the road. We had nobody from our office there to fix everything that can go wrong electronically with a game. And Victoria, I want to give you a lot of credit. Yeah, give Victoria a round of applause. You and Austin crushed it. But we had
a few replays that game, too.
I know, and the real system didn't work. But whatever. Don't tell the conference office. But I will say, when we were watching the stream, we pulled it up as soon as the volleyball match was over in Duluth. We probably had 15 or 20 people sitting around watching still. Like, they were trying to kick us out, and we said, no, we're not leaving until the women's basketball game's over.
I appreciate that.
And when we look across, and you can't, from that angle, and you see the same angle we see on the game film, you can't really see the side behind the bench.
Like, right.
But the west side was still really full for having the volleyball team on the road. At the same time, for having the football team on the road at the same time, for men's basketball being on the road and cross country being on the road, you think about all that. That should have, in most places, that equals out to a rough home opener crowd.
No question, and they still have some
fans,
cheerleaders there too. It was big,
and our fans showed up.
They did, and we needed it because it was a lot closer game than we wanted it to be. And so you need that support at home, especially in a close game like that. They were big for free throws down the stretch for the opposing team, even though they went 8-for-8. I'm glad that they did their job, and they're learning for the bigger games down the stretch. But really, really good turnout. I'm pleased with that. Pleased to see the support all year. I mean, it's been fun really watching volleyball, watching football, and the runs we've had. I wish we had a chance to watch soccer more, but we had like two home games.
Mother Nature was not our friend this year. We've got a game ops wrap-up meeting for soccer tomorrow. It's going to take about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
We weren't home. So we I don't know how many of these you've actually gotten to watch this year, but we do take viewer questions. They're usually relatively serious.
Oh.
But that's also a terrible lie. So here's our first one. Farley from Chickasha. If you dunk it from the three-point line, does it count as Chickasha, sorry. If you dunk it from the three-point line, does it count as 3 points or two?
No question. Three.
All right.
It's where you take off from.
All right. Bill from Bandera, an avid Facebook Live viewer. Does Coach Burton have a better crossover or behind-the-back dribble move? I saw you play in college, and I can't remember because that was a long time ago for me.
Neither. Better jump shot.
Yeah, he's a spot-up shooter, man.
Better jump shot.
Also, follow-up question, is the Harlem Globetrotter instructional video a video you watch while planning practices?
No, but I may need to consider that, though, moving forward.
Should we play, Sweet Georgia Brown when y'all come out to the floor? We might do that tomorrow.
I want the warm-ups.
Okay. That's on you. You order the gear. I mean.
Talk to Under Armour. Under Armour, we need the Harlem Globetrotter stripes. Get that going.
That would be impressive. So, you're back in the field house tomorrow night, taking on St. Mary's, and then on the road at Southeastern on Sunday. What should fans who have been involved with fall sports and can finally come watch, what should they expect to see out of your team? This new young team who only has three players they've ever seen before.
This is true.
You've got three players that everybody except you has seen before, and one of them happens to have scored let's back up. Let's talk about Princess Davis scoring her 1,000th point the other night. That's a heck of an accomplishment for any player, but it's it's one you had to, like, we knew it was coming for P, but
yeah,
that's a special one because she's been through a lot in her time here.
That's really special to see everything that kid has gone through and just to see how much she's elevated this program.
Mm-hmm.
To have an accomplishment like that. And I think she has many more great milestones coming up this year. And you talk about somebody that could be the all-time leader in games played, games started, minutes. There's a lot of things that she can come upon. And then she has a chance, you know, if we can make some shots when she passes the ball to creep up to number one in assists. You know, she's got a tall task to do that. But
yeah, Marcus just tells me that she's second all-time and she's got about 140 to go to catch first.
Yeah, which is
totally doable.
It's totally doable. I think we have a team that can really score the ball this year in a variety of ways. Last year we had three players that you really bank on.
Yeah.
They can score the ball, and we've had seven players this year in double figures. And so when you have that much versatility, it's been fun. Like I said, it's a learning process for me because every day you're seeing something new that somebody else is doing, and you're like, okay, I didn't know you could do that. And Jocelyn Pierce is hitting threes now.
It blows my mind, but didn't she hit one at Baylor?
She hit one at Baylor,
and I was like, "Oh, okay."
She hit one up over in Lubbock, and so, you know, to see people continue to grow their game and just guard different positions, and we can score in different levels, and so it's been really, really fun with this team so far, and anxious to get back on the floor to continue to see the different things that this team is going to be able to do.
And then, because you probably won't be able to make it over here for practice purposes before the conference opener against Angelo on the 29th. That's the Education Day doubleheader.
Actually will be able to because we'll have Monday off.
Then we will save that note because we're going to talk about that. That's one of my favorite days of the year. We'll make sure we pop it. It's a day game. For those of you in here who don't know what it is, 11 o'clock for the men, 1 o'clock for the women on Thursday, November the 29th. That's a week after Thanksgiving. The gym's going to be packed. Seth, how many we got right now? Got about 1,700 school children coming to cheer you all on. Guys get to play first this year, so they'll get to see some dunks. Nothing against your team, but I mean, imagine how loud it's going to get with dunks.
So,
but we got threes too.
Zhang Tack is grabbing the rim with two hands.
No
right
way.
Now.
No way.
Because she saw Craig Casey's girl pull the rim down last year. She's like, I'm not getting. I got to step my game up. And so,
our
goal is by her senior year to dunk, at least dunk at volleyball.
I was going to say, have we ever seen a Division II player dunk in a game? I know we've seen it in Division I. I don't think we've seen a Division II player.
Where's Coach Farmer at?
Farmer doesn't get over here.
Need to get her on the Vertimax, get those squats going.
We can send him this clip. Right, I bet he's on Facebook. We can send him this clip. Coach Farmer, get her on the Vertimax. Get the, what did you say, squats?
Squats
going.
Yes.
So Zhang Tack can dunk by 2020. Tack in 2020. That's the line. Tack in 2020. All right. Well, congratulations so far on a good start. I know it's got to be tough getting that team together with a lot of new faces, getting any win on the board. I'm not going to say is good, but getting that momentum going to when we need it in conference season. Great.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, that'll wrap up our coach's show here tonight. Hope we should be back here next Monday night at Snuffers as we get ready for some more basketball and talk about hopefully another football playoff win. Signing off tonight, Josh Mank from Linesworth.